Hello, it's me, Anna. Before we begin, we do mention domestic violence in this episode, so please listen with care. We all want to feel good, and with just a cursory look at social media, it feels like there's always something we could be doing to benefit our mind, body, and soul. From mainstream therapies like yoga, meditation, and Reiki, to things like penis facials, bee sting therapy, and vagina sunbathing. But the quest to feel our best can come at a cost. Here to unpack the world of wellness, spirituality, and radical healing is Charlotte Church, superstar singer and founder of the Wellness and Healing Centre, The Dreaming. Plus, we have psychic astrologer, Sunday Times bestselling author, and my very good friend, Michelle Knight. Welcome to It Can't Just Be Me.
Hi, Anna.
Hey, Anna.
Hey, Anna.
Hi, Anna.
Hey, Anna.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Anna.
It can't just be me who's really struggling with staying faithful.
I definitely got menopause brain.
I really want children, and he doesn't.
I have feelings of jealousy.
It's just all around the middle. I feel like a Teletubby.
And then I hated myself for feeling that way.
If you've got any advice.
I would really appreciate any advice.
It can't just be me.
It can't just be me, right?
Charlotte, voice of an angel church, and my spiritual guru, Michelle Knight. Welcome to It Can't Just Be Me. How are you both?
I'm very well. Really good.
I have to say, Charlotte, you've got the face of an angel. You're looking incredibly calm and incredibly zen. What is that all about? Is that your penis facial?
It's these Welsh hills.
It is the Welsh hills. It suits you, darling. And how are you, Michelle?
Very, very good. And I have to say, I would say goddess, not angel. Forest goddess.
She is, isn't she? She looks amazing.
You are the empress, darling.
Now, as you know, I always start my episodes by asking my guests for their very own It Can't Just Be Me dilemma. So let's start with you first, Charlotte. What's yours?
It can't just be me that thinks that plastic plants are literally signalling the coming of the apocalypse.
Do you know, I think you might be right. I've got a real thing about plastic plants. I don't understand why anybody would represent nature in a plastic way.
Yeah, I think it's like it's literally the antithesis of everything that we should be doing in order to like save this incredibly glorious, rich, diverse planet. And plastic plants is just like, it's the absolute pits.
And are you the kind of person that will go into a bar or an office that has nothing to do with you and start watering their plants?
Yes, absolutely. If there's a plant in need, then I am tuned in to, I look at my plants all day long and I feel like there's all sorts of communications going on, which are just below sort of conscious awareness of readings going both ways, I should imagine.
Do you know, I've got a plant at home that I rescued because it was looking a little bit sad in somebody else's house, and I repotted it and he started to thrive. I call him he started to thrive, and now he keeps giving me loads of babies.
Yeah.
He just is really trying hard to keep sprouting leaves, and I talk to him every day. I'm like, give me another baby, you're incredible.
Oh.
So I know, I hear you with the plastic plants.
Oh.
So it isn't just you. Michelle Knight, what is your
yes.
It Can't Just Be Me dilemma?
I'm not saying mine now. You told me it was supposed to be light and fluffy, and now we've got like real stuff to talk about. But before I say that, my wife actually has a plant hospital in the castle. So she's got a whole room. Any slight suffering, that plant is taken there to rest and recuperate. So.
Oh, I love the fact that Kathy does. I didn't realise that she's got a plant hospital.
Yes, amazing.
That's like a whole TV series, plant hospital. So
yeah,
what is your It Can't Just Be Me dilemma?
My very superficial It Can't Just Be Me thanks is It Can't Just Be Me that literally, and I'm not exaggerating, has 500,000 unread emails and it has gone too far. I don't even know what to do. They're just there. Every time I open
them.
It up, they're there. No, but you've got too many. I've tried and it just can't cope.
Oh,
it just doesn't delete. It's like the plastic plants. It's just going to get worse and worse.
There's just more and more and more of them every
yeah.
day. They're just going to keep on
yeah.
sprouting. So you physically can't keep up with deleting
no,
your...
it's gone. It's just, you know.
Do you know, I have to say, I think that is just you. I would love to know. I'd love to know if anybody else listening has 500,000 unread emails.
And I'm not exaggerating at all. And it's getting, by then it'll be 600,000. But yeah.
I love that. I love that. Now, let's move on. Charlotte, I really want to start with you because I know you as a musical prodigy. So actually, I'm intrigued to hear more about your spiritual awakening. And I noticed just before we came on air that you've got these two amazing snake tattoos on your arms. So you are definitely growing into a bit of a goddess vibe. Just talk to us a little bit about opening up your healing center, the Dreaming, when you had your spiritual awakening, because you were brought up a Catholic. Was religion a big part of your upbringing, would you say?
I think it was, in a way that it created community. So lots of like my first singing performances and stuff were around the church socials and that sort of stuff. I went to church every Sunday till I was 12 with my nana, but I found it incredibly boring. Apart from like maybe like I really liked the frankincense, the smell and the whole theatrics of it, like that, I suppose, a little bit. But yeah, so I don't think that my spiritual awakening is necessarily rooted in religion at all.
But I'm just going to interrupt because I can completely identify with what you're saying, because my father is a priest. I was brought up in the Church of England, and, you know, I'm exactly the same as you. I went to church every week as a child. And even though, obviously, as kids, you find it a bit boring, I loved the smell of it. I loved the pageantry of it. I loved the tradition of it, the performance of it, and the community. As you rightly say, we lived right next to the church. It's interesting that you've gone on to be a performer. I've gone on to be a performer. So I think that there's something about that church upbringing that does inform you, if you've got that in you as being a you know, a slightly theatrical person. Do you not think?
Absolutely. And I think that's, you know, because built into it, I think that you've got, there is a lot of singing. And as you say, there is sort of like a lot of storytelling as well. I think that even if you aren't necessarily digging it very hard as a teenager, all of that is going in. You know, we're very permeable as young people. So, yes. So religion, I suppose, set the scene. But really, I think it is nature and my understanding of the feminine and the divinely feminine, which is an actual, you know, quite a big counterbalance to the rhetoric of lots of our religious upbringing, particularly in Christianity, which is quite different, I suppose, to that.
So at what point did you connect with that wider sense of the spiritual, and how much of it is informed by the fact you're Welsh?
I think that I've always had it, and I think we all always have had it, but I think that for me, music, that it's been music throughout my life which has really enabled me to connect with something much deeper or much higher, or however you want to sort of characterize it. But yes, music is the catalyst. Music first, and then nature was sort of my second awakening, when I really started to look around me and understand, you know, this incredible tapestry of richness and complexity and beauty that I was submerged in. But actually, I'd lived a very indoor existence for large swathes of my life, and then as soon as I had my eyes open to nature, then I was just like, yeah, absolutely divine.
Tell me about your healing center, the Dreaming, and how did the Dreaming come about?
So the Dreaming came about, I think, I've always had a deep want to soothe and to balm in ways. I think that that's what my singing was when I was a kid.
So actually, you've had this drive to heal.
Yeah, I suppose. I'm not sure if I always would have categorized it as that. I feel like it was just, you know, when I was young, it was very much other people put that onto me. People who would be like, oh my gosh, you've cured me of brain cancer. And oh, you know, when my grandmother hears your voice, she's got Alzheimer's. It's the only time we sort of get a reaction out of her. So I grew up with a lot of those sorts of stories directed at me. But to be honest, they made me feel a bit weird as a little one. But it's only as I've gotten older that I've realised, it's always been there. And it's like a deeply programmed calling, I suppose, or at least seek of mine, in which to try and be a balm, try and be help people to connect with nature, I think, connect with music, connect with singing and song, but also to connect with beauty, because I find that beauty deeply soothes me. And so I'm trying to create those experiences for other people where they are so submerged in something that's so extraordinary. So maybe it's watching a sunrise and, you know, chanting at dawn with a group of other people in this beautiful place in mid Wales, which all of a sudden, just even though it's very simple, those couple of elements just make it transcendental. And then you've got people who are just like, oh my gosh, look how beautiful this life is.
I think you've just hit the nail on the head there, Charlotte, which is there's the transcendental, isn't there? About, you know, that when you're singing, you have that transcendental experience. And then with the dreaming and the therapies and the workshops that you do and immersing yourself in nature, it's transcendental. Yeah. So I understand that word. I understand what it is you're trying to do there. But yeah. Michelle, moving on to you, I know that you had a very, very difficult childhood, which at times was deeply traumatic, and you've written about that in your autobiography. And you have turned your life around into something exceptional and extraordinary. So just fill us in a little bit about what role did spirituality and psychic ability play in your life growing up?
Well, luckily, even though I had those horrendous traumatic experiences from a baby upwards, my mother was a very powerful psychic. And so in the house, there'd be psychic readings, tarot cards on my playthings. And actually, regardless of all the chaos and the terrible things, my intuition was luckily very much more open than most people get the chance to be. So my intuition saved my life numerous times.
Oh, really? In what way? So give us an example.
Like, for instance, when my stepfather was like literally axing the whole room and chasing my mother, I had this sense I knew what I had to do. So in this instance, it saved her life. So he opened the door just a crack and I looked at him and I felt this love come through me. And it came through me and it came out of my eyes and I looked at him and there was just this power of love. In fact, it changed my life, that experience. And he was mesmerised by that for a moment. And my mother climbed out of the hatch, you know, back in the day, the 70s hatches.
Yes, into the kitchen. Yeah.
And we escaped.
Wow. So that's really interesting that you felt a power coming through you that was pure love and it stopped your stepfather in his tracks.
Yeah.
Absolutely extraordinary. You now run some very successful businesses, including Michelle Knight Psychics. Why do people go to see psychics for readings, do you think?
The reason I set up my psychic company is because there was a lot of dodgy psychic companies and there was a lack of ethics in the industry in general. And I wanted it to be different. So I wanted to set something up that would have very high standards and would be 21st century. So yes, you tell people things they couldn't possibly know about the past, present, but you empower people to be able to use their own intuition, transform their own future by looking at past patterns as well, seeing what's coming up. Because actually, when something comes up, you know, it could be really bad and shocking. But if you know about it and then you talk through how you can handle it, that's the difference.
So in a sense, you're saying you set up a 21st century psychic company where you're using intuitive ability along with psychology to actually empower people. So rather than just using prediction or cold reading, you're going, actually, this is a therapeutic service in a sense. I'm empowering people.
Yeah. So if someone says to you, oh, I've got a grandfather here and I'm getting the shiny shoes, loved a cup of tea, I'm getting roses in the garden. I mean, we don't want that. We want very, very specific details about your past, your dynamics with your parents that you couldn't possibly know and you don't say it. They say it to you. So it has to be proof-based and then empowering.
I think now's the time to move on to the dilemma. And we've had some very interesting dilemmas that have come in about this subject. So let's first hear from an anonymous listener who is sceptical about his partner's beliefs.
Hi, Anna. I had a bit of a shit time last year. Got made redundant from a job I loved, and I've been struggling financially since. It's also made me feel really, really lost as a result of this. My partner is really big into alternative therapies and manifesting, and we've been fighting a lot. She spends a lot of money on things like acupuncture and expensive wellness retreats that she wants to go on, and to be honest, I'm baffled that she's spending that kind of money when one of us isn't really earning any money. She's convinced that I need to, well, manifest myself out of the rut. She keeps saying to me to trust in the universe and to visualise what I want. But isn't this school of thought a bit dangerous when bad things happen to good people all the time and it's out of their control? And what if someone doesn't want to hear it? For example, she's been telling her sister, who's about to give birth, that she should manifest a positive, pain-free labour, which really seems ridiculous to me. I feel like it's a bit cultish, and I can't really get on board with it. I just want to rant to the person I love about how shit this is for me, but I can't. I mean, what can I do to change my outlook about this? Or if I can't, do you think two people with such different beliefs can really think about building a life together?
Okay, so let's first talk about the elephant in the room here, which is the money this listener's partner is spending on wellness retreats and therapies. So to put this into context, the wellness industry is worth around $5 trillion worldwide, which is extraordinary. So clearly there's money to be made. Charlotte, as the owner of a healing retreat, how do you square being a business with a higher spiritual purpose and helping people?
I think that's a really great question. And everything that you do has to be based in values and ethics. So at The Dreaming, we've got a pay what you can space on each retreat. We've got a sliding scale price range. I'm not interested in just being a plaything of the rich. Like we're doing much bigger, more important work here. There is a phenomenal amount of spiritual bypassing that goes on within the wellness industry.
What do you mean by spiritual bypassing? That's interesting.
I think that loads of people are making a large amount of money in every area possible in the wellness industry who are badly intentioned. That it's all about capitalism. It's all about the sort of, you know, manifest abundance sort of rhetoric. You know, there has to be an underpinning of all of us doing our part to like deeply, deeply help people and deeply help towards the liberation of all people. And that means being politically active. That means being like ethically sound. That means proportioning like off parts of your profits and such, making sure that you are affordable for some things at least. So I really think that it's much the same as anything. Once capitalism, rampant capitalism, gets its hands on anything, it knows no ethics, it knows no morals, no values, and it knows no limits. And that is why we're in such a pickle worldwide.
So you're saying, certainly in terms of The Dreaming and your own business, that this absolutely fundamentally, quintessentially aligns with your values and your beliefs. And you're saying the point of my business here is to make it affordable for those people that need healing, in inverted commas. And I offset any of my profits to charity because that's what's important to me, that I'm not just a profit-making machine.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're only in year two of our business, so we're not making any profit. We're not washing our own face yet. But as soon as we do, then a portion of that is going to go straight to Indigenous, different Indigenous tribes throughout the world, because that is one of the best ways that we can impact climate instability. For me, one of our biggest problems, particularly in the UK, is the stratification of society, so that, you know, the wealthier with the wealthy and the poorer with the poor and all of that sort of stuff. And so how are we creating situations constantly where everybody's breaking bread around the table? Everybody's having these amazing experiences together that bond beyond all of the ways in which you would generally be separated. And so, yeah, I think that there are a lot of people in the wellness industry who aren't doing that stuff. And so I think that to seek those people out is very important. Otherwise, it can feel a bit cultish.
Interesting. Michelle, what would you say about this?
I 100% agree with every single thing you said. It's incredibly important. All of us coming together. Whenever I've done workshops, there's always been a free space.
So it's important to you that yes. you're giving back and that you're being yes. inclusive for everybody.
Yes. And I think anybody with a soul that's doing this work, it's absolutely natural because, you know, we're empaths. That's the whole point of it. You know, we feel and we care. And that's the, you know, meaning of it all.
So, I mean, it does feel a little bit like it's become cool to be spiritual now. And everybody's talking about their shaman or their healer. Do you welcome this trend, the both of you? Or do you worry that actually it's just become a bit of a TikTok craze?
I think it's scary. I think more scary than ever before for me. Because when I go on TikTok and I see some of the things that are being said, absolutely outrageous. Like, oh, you've got the evil eye on you. If you're scrolling past this video, it means you've got the evil eye on you. That makes my hair stand up on end, you know, because you're projecting that negativity. There's a thing called, I don't know if you've heard of it, a nocebo, which is the opposite
of placebo.
Yes. Mm. And it's just like the placebo works. If you are pouring negativity, oh my goodness, it's so destructive. So yes, I'm terrified.
So you find it worrying about the nonsense that's coming out yes. on social platforms. What about for you, Charlotte? I mean, just going back into what we were saying about, you know, the charlatanism within the wellness industry, does it worry you, the kind of stuff that you're seeing on social platforms?
Sure, absolutely. But I think that, you know, in a way, it's to be expected. You know, the social platforms, our social media stuff, it's all the technology. It's so young. You know, we're so human centric. We're so egocentric as humanity that we think that we're the absolute bee's knees. We're the smartest in existence. But, you know, humanity itself is very young in comparison to our cousins in nature, whether that's trees or whether it's birds or whatever. And the more we understand about the systems of nature and how complex they actually are and really what's going on. So I feel like I don't despair about it. I do feel a bit like, you know, it's the Andy Warhol thing coming to pass, isn't it? Everybody's having their 5 minutes of fame. It's all these false gods, you know? So I feel like it's not great and it's definitely muddying the waters and it's very confusing for a lot of people, particularly for our young people who are really impressionable. We are really lacking the elders and also the relationship building because none of this knowledge, none of the good stuff, none of the good knowledge to pass down has any depth really, and unless it comes with relationship. We can only ever move at the speed of trust. So yeah, even if it is good information, if there's no relationship behind it, then even that becomes a bit shallow. So yes, whilst I am a bit like, oh gosh, how is it all going to go? I do have, at the end of the day, total faith that we're just quite young and that nature and the systems of Earth will find homeostasis, homeodynamics, like balance within the ecosystem.
So the second trigger that our listener talks about is being told he can manifest himself out of a rut after being made redundant. Now, I know manifestation is a bit of a sort of buzz topic at the moment. Michelle, I know that you're writing a book about manifesting. So first of all, tell us, what is it exactly?
It's about the ability of being able to transform your reality and create the things that you desire. But I believe it's not a superficial act. It's a multi-layered act that takes into account the way your brain works, reprogramming your brain from the negativity, which is scientific fact. It's about understanding the quantum universe. It's about, to put it simply, it's about being like a beacon for your desires and drawing towards you what you want.
And presumably also taking action.
Because absolutely.
I think a lot of the problems about manifestation that's out there at the moment. It's this idea, and I think our listeners touching on it here, that, you know, manifest your way out of, you know, this negative thinking and the fact you've been made redundant. Well, actually, this is about not just visualizing a great life, it's about taking the action, isn't it, to change your life. So it's empowering.
And also reprogramming yourself, which has multiple benefits. But I'm just going to give you a couple of examples of the absolutely incredible things that I manifested. When I was a single parent living in a council flat, somebody said to me, and I was in a really, really bad space at the time, and they were from Tobago and they were telling me these stories of Tobago. So I was like, I really want to go to Tobago. Within 2 weeks, I got a phone call from my friend and she said, oh, I've just won this competition, which is actually to go to Egypt. And I said, oh, hang on a minute. I didn't order Egypt. I ordered Tobago. And I said, do you think we could go to Tobago with you winning that? And she rang up. She was working for a big soft drinks company. She rang them up. And within 3 weeks, I was on a beach in Tobago. In fact, I was so freaked out. I couldn't really get into it until the last day because I was like, you know, but this happens to me a lot.
Because you knew from a very young age that, you know, you changed your name to Knight. You had this vision and this knowing that everything would work out well for you. And you have created a life of extraordinary abundance and wellness and happiness, haven't you?
Through giving back and through love. And I truly believe that. And that's the key. But, you know, the point is, you know, I left home at 13. I was homeless when I was 8 months pregnant, climbing into squats. You wouldn't have looked on paper and think that my transformation could be like that. But within that time, all these extraordinary things proved to me that manifesting exists. So, but it's complicated and it is political. You can't strip it back into just, it's all about me. One of the most powerful things about manifesting is scientifically proven that we all are one and can become one. Like, I'm sure you've heard of it, but if not, it's called entrainment, brain entrainment. So when people sing together, all of their brain synchronizes to this exactly the same wavelengths. And, you know, my big passion is that we all work together, right? Because it's deeper than I believe it's deeper than our brain just joining forces. I believe we're very powerful and together we can evolve the whole to grow in love. And, you know, that is part of the process. We are not single dots just doing things for ourselves. The more we join together, the more we synchronize, the more that we can create bigger changes.
Charlotte, do you believe in the power of manifestation? Is it something that you endorse at The Dreaming?
It's not something that we do sort of in a sort of direct way, but I like to think of it like what you pay attention to grows. So I'm a big believer in, you know, really honing one's awareness and attention in a sort of Buddhist sort of way, I suppose. And I'm undecided, but then I'm undecided on a lot of things. And the way that I view life, and particularly with sort of spiritual wellness practices and stuff, particularly the things that I think are just a little bit outside of my realm of understanding currently, is just that it's more scientific to entertain everything. So really, I just see it as a veritable buffet of delights.
So you're curious. You're saying that I'm openly curious.
Yeah, and whilst I don't feel like I've manifested anything like cleanly, you know, I have set my intentions and my attention on something that I want to do, and then I have worked diligently towards it, and it has come into being. I mean, The Dreaming as it is, when I first started thinking about The Dreaming and visioning it and how it was going to be and how it was going to feel and really feeling that on the land, being on the land and just feeling how it was going to feel. When we opened then, within the first couple of months, it was just like, oh my gosh, it's exactly it. This is exactly how I thought it would be. And I suppose that is the first time that's ever happened to me. And so maybe that could be considered manifesting, yeah.
Finally, this dilemma is underpinned by a very big question. Can two people with very different core beliefs build a life together? Charlotte, what do you think?
Well, what I would say is that generally, not necessarily. However, what it seems to me like is that potentially he might need to shake off a little of that cynicism and embrace the receptivity, the feminine, a little more, because actually he doesn't seem to be very fulfilled in what's happening for him currently. And so I think shaking off cynicism, particularly for men, is very important. And so however he can do that, however he can open himself up, I would say go with her, because there's so much joy and delightfulness to be experienced in these spiritual wellness areas. So I would say, yeah, give in, surrender.
What is the one piece of advice to both of you that you'd give to our listener in this situation? Michelle, if I start with you.
I think that he needs to respect her desires, but also it sounds to me that there's not much communication. Communication is key to intimacy. And, you know, it's about respect, and it's about actually saying, I feel vulnerable in this situation. So for him to be maybe more aware of his vulnerability and to talk it out from the heart. He probably won't be into this, but there's a very good technique that you can do where you place your left hand on your partner's heart with your right hand over it and vice versa. And you eye gaze and you send the love to each other. And if you do that before a conversation, again, your brains are on the same wavelength and it's much easier to communicate. So if there's something important, I think give it a go. Start to explore the mysteries of life.
So communicate better, perhaps be a little bit more curious about why she's believing some of these things. And in terms of, because he asks, how can I get out of this mindset? I think there is something about perhaps trying to be more curious about different beliefs. Charlotte, what would you say? What's the one piece of advice that you would give to our listener?
I would say there's a Buddhist concept called beginner's mind. I'm talking a lot about Buddhism. I'm not at all Buddhist. I'm just very interested in all sorts of different things. But beginner's mind is the idea where you come absolutely brand new, absolutely fresh to a problem, an issue, a dilemma, whatever it is, with no preconceived ideas. You just try and behave as though you're completely brand new. And so what that might do is A, enable some of that cynicism to melt away somewhat, for him to be able to genuinely hear her passion and her excitement around what she's got going on with her manifesting. And then, yeah, potentially to have a sort of more intimate communication around the exploration of the mysteries, as you say, Michelle, which is a wonderful thing in a partnership to explore together.
Okay, we've had a second dilemma in. It's on a similar theme, from a listener who's concerned about how frequently his partner is going to see a psychic. It's anonymous, so in this instance, our producer is reading it out. So let's hear it.
Hey, Anna. My partner goes to see a psychic at least once a month. Now, I wasn't bored at first, as the visit seemed to cheer her up a bit and give her a sense of direction for the weeks ahead. But it's costing her a lot of money and she's become very dependent on what her psychic says to her, and it's prompting her to consider some fairly drastic life changes. It's like her psychic's word is gospel, and I'm a little concerned that the person she goes to see isn't genuine and might just be cold reading. Should I suggest she cuts ties with this person and starts to see an accredited therapist instead?
Right, straight off the bat, Michelle, I could see you nodding. I imagine you have a lot to say on this one. First of all, what do we actually mean when we talk about a psychic, in inverted commas? It seems to be an umbrella term for lots of different abilities. So what do we mean by that?
Well, I think many people have different perceptions. From my understanding, it's someone who can tune in to the past, present and future very specifically. So you get a medium that it connects with people on the other side. A psychic is somebody that talks about your past, present and future.
Specifically, we're saying this is somebody who has an ability,
yeah,
the intuition to be able, yes, to read your past, your present and potentially your future.
Yes.
What checks do you do on the psychics that you employ? Because this listener's saying, I'm really worried that this person's not genuine. What checks do you do?
Well, this is why I do it the way I do it. They have five readings.
Test readings.
Yeah, without the person saying anything. And they have to pick up on very specific, unique details, not generic ones. Also, I have had psychics that have passed all of those tests and come to me because they've given amazing details. But I felt that they weren't emotionally intelligent. And therefore, it's a no. Because as I was saying before, you are there to empower. You are not there to give your opinion. You are not there to take away someone's empowerment. You are there to empower the person to make the choices that they want to make with all the information given to them. So it's, you know, it's a thorny subject because there are so many inauthentic psychics out there.
I agree with you. I mean, you know, I've met and worked with a lot of psychics and a lot of mediums. And I have to say, I think I've only met maybe a handful where I've been absolutely thrown by their ability, where I've thought, I genuinely don't know how you got that information about me. So, Charlotte, do you believe in the ability of psychics?
I think that I've always been really curious. And I had one reading when I was about 16 in Hawaii. And she said something about my granddad having like some sort of illness starting in his throat and then literally, and that he needed to have these tofu smoothies. It was so specific. And then literally weeks after, my bumpy developed throat cancer, or at least we found out he had throat cancer. And so then I used to make my nana make him these fruit smoothies with tofu in them. And he recovered and he was, you know, all good.
But you had no idea at the time, you had no idea that your granddad was ill.
No, nothing at all. It was really amazing and bizarre. And she said some other things to me as well that really made sense, really made a lot of sense of my life and where I was at, and almost like having more of a zoomed out view of what was going on in my life, which I found really helpful at the time. But then, you know, then much the same as you guys are just talking about, I've also spoken to people who were clearly cold reading and it was just a bit general and vague. And that's a real shame then, isn't it? Because it really clouds the people who are doing this really amazing or who are gifted in this way. I've also got friends, really good friends who don't do it for a living at all, but who are clearly very naturally just have the ability, have some sort of like channeling ability or seer ability. And so that's been really interesting, them just giving me tidbits throughout my life.
You mentioned cold reading, Charlotte. Michelle, just give us a bit more about that. What is cold reading and how do you spot it?
It's using generic information like I get a John here.
Or was he in the military?
Yes, like a military gentleman here. You don't want that. You want very specific details. And for me, the readings aren't about what technical information you can give. It's about empowering, healing, intense, transformational reading that helps people burst out of their shell into their power.
They can burst out of their problem, I guess. Yeah. So, Michelle, do you think that people can become addicted to psychics when really they should be seeing a therapist?
100%. And again, in my company, if people overuse, we say, look, you've spent too much. And also, it's not useful because things don't, like, interestingly, I had a client years ago who for 10 years wrote down every reading, had a tape of every reading I did back in the day. And then we had a conversation. She said, what's interesting is over those 10 years, things I said maybe 9 years ago happened, but not necessarily next week. Time is very soupy. Mm. So everything happened, but it was over different periods of time. So you can get very confused if you go too often. And also then you can start sending out the wrong energy because a lot of people can ring up because they want to get someone who can give them what they want to hear. So all of that is deeply unhealthy, but it can be just as addictive as a gambling addiction or anything else, 100%. So yes, there is reason here to be cautious in this dilemma. And I think that, you know, they need to have a conversation. You never give your power away to a psychic. And if a psychic starts taking your power, manipulating you, having a judgmental opinion, all of those are massive red flags and it ain't a parade.
And do you have red flags when, with some of your clients, where you think, look, you really should be seeing a therapist?
Yes, and we recommend that. And we have a list of, you know, help numbers and organisations. 100%.
Charlotte, do you think there would ever be a place for psychic readings at the Dreaming?
There is a therapist, a psychic that we work with called Dr. Kate Thomas, who is absolutely extraordinary. And so I absolutely think that that could be for, you know, private clients, somebody who wanted something else or something that was more along those lines, then that would be absolutely grand.
Yeah.
It's out of our three pillars being sound therapy, nature and ceremony. But I suppose it could be ceremony in a certain context.
Finally, the pair of you, what one piece of advice would you both give to this listener about his partner who he feels is becoming dependent on her psychic?
Again, I don't think it's necessarily up to him. All of these dilemmas are about having a conversation. Otherwise, that's disempowering. Oh, you can't go and see the psychic. No. But I would suggest to his partner to give it a rest for 6 months or a year. Follow your own intuition. Learn the tarot. Do things so that you've got information now. You know this stuff works. Now find it in yourself and you will be amazed at what you can achieve on your own.
Charlotte, what would you say?
I'd probably say there's something that we do with the dreaming called listening partnerships, which is where you have a conversation with somebody, but rather than asking more questions, you're just like reflecting what they're saying back at them. And therefore, that person who is talking is feeling really understood, really heard, really seen, really validated. And then they tend to go a bit deeper into what's actually going on.
I hear what you're saying. So you're saying maybe communicate better with your partner to understand why she's being compelled to go and see her psychic so frequently.
Yeah.
And just the active listening of talk to me more about what's going on for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to find out what's the deeper thing there that's going on? What is she getting from it? And then hopefully, you know, you can move from a place of deep understanding.
Fabulous advice.
Charlotte, Michelle, thank you both for being here today and sharing your personal stories as well as your expertise with us all. I am grateful to both of you for making so much time for us. And thank you for listening. If anything has resonated with you today, then please do get in touch and tell us. We love to hear from you and we read everything that comes our way. In the meantime, I'll be back next week with a new episode of It Can't Just Be Me. So please keep sending us your voice notes. You can get in touch at itcan'tjustbeme.co.uk or you can email me at itcan'tjustbeme@podimo.com. And if you want to see more of the show, remember, you can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube and Facebook. Just search for It Can't Just Be Me, because whatever you're dealing with, I promise you, it really isn't just you. From Podimo and Mags, this has been It Can't Just Be Me, hosted by me, Anna Richardson. The producers are Laura Williams and Christy Calloway-Gale. The editor is Kit Milson. The executive producers for Podimo are Jake Chudnow and Matt White. The executive producer for Mags is Faith Russell. Don't forget to follow the show or for early access to episodes and to listen ad-free, subscribe to Podimo UK on Apple Podcasts.